Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Israeli genocide in Gaza has been going on for a year. The West is largely indifferent, occasionally embarrassed by the excesses. The rest of the world, the global South, is outraged and disgusted. Western legitimacy has collapsed. A year on, the world has changed. Crosstalking a year of genocide, I'm joined by my guest in Beirut, Adnan Nasser. He is an independent foreign policy and Middle East analyst. We also have Esteban Carrillo Lopez. He is a news desk editor for The Cradle. And we also have Sharmeen Narwani. She is a journalist and analyst of West Asian geopolitics. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Sharmeen, let me go to you first. There's so many things to talk about 1 year on. The world has changed a lot. There's been losers, there have been some winners, and I put that in air quotes. But fundamentally, the West is not going to do anything to stop this genocide in Gaza and probably spread, it's already spread to the West Bank and into Lebanon. Your thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right at the beginning of the conflict in November, retired Israeli Major General Yitzhak Brick, who was, I think, the ombudsman for the Israeli army, said, quote, all of our missiles, the ammunition, the precision-guided bombs, all the airplanes and bombs, it's all from the U.S. The minute they turn off the tap, you can't keep fighting. We have no capability, and everyone understands that we can't fight this war without the United States, period. And I think, you know, there are European countries that are balking at this point. I mean, 1 year on, their favorite ally in the region has gone from victim to pariah and has stayed that way with, you know, ICJ and ICC court rulings, you know, already given and still underway for genocide in particular. So I think, you know, despite Israel's bravado and chest thumping in the last week or so, you can see the tables have turned very quickly in the last few days. I mean, just today, Hezbollah fired, I think, over 200 rockets and missiles into Haifa and its environment. And Israelis, as we're watching on Telegram and other social media channels, are saying you can't imagine what it's like. If you can't just report on it, you have to be here to see. And of course, that's what the Beirut suburb, that's what eastern Lebanon, Bekaa, that's what southern Lebanon has been facing. That's what the entirety of the Gaza Strip has been facing for the last year. And in the last few days, the north of the Gaza Strip, which is being bulldozed over, you know, as we speak. So none of this would be possible without the United States. We have to stop calling this an Israeli war. This is a U.S. war on the region.
Yeah, it's a neocolonial war on the region, okay? And, you know, I think one of the things that has frustrated me, let me go to Esteban about this, frustrated me, but also given me hope at the same time, is how we relate this narrative, because it is neocolonialism being confronted by resistance. That's how we should be phrasing this here. And the Western media does the huge disfavor of just demonizing a group of people. Everything started on October 7th. What we're up against not only is the violence of this genocide and spreading genocide, but we're up against a narrative that is intensely biased and intentionally misinforming. Esteban.
100%, Peter. This has become more than a war between countries or factions. This is a war against the truth. This is a war of narratives. And Western media for 1 year straight has been complicit in the genocide by misrepresenting, by misinforming what the reality here on the ground is, which is you have natives fighting against the colonizers. You have native resistance groups fighting against these neocolonial forces funded by Washington, by the EU, funded, supported by Gulf monarchies in many ways. So, you know, as I say, this is a war of against truth. This is also why you see so many attacks on journalists. This is why The Cradle was taken off a deep platform by Meta, or you have other, you know, journalists being detained in airports, deep platform as well from other, you know, by Google, by X, etc. It's simply the narrative got away from them. As you said, to them, it almost seemed like history started on 7 October 2023 and nothing happened before. Before that, it was a paradise, occupied Palestine. So now we have the control of the narrative. We are telling the story, yeah, and that terrifies them. And this is why they come at us so hard. But simply the case is they lost control. They not only no longer have security in Israel, they also no longer have the meat of superiority. Neither does the US, neither does the UK, or NATO for that matter. But now they also, the major news outlets, they do not control the narrative. They are trying to catch up, but sadly using the same methods as before, which is to lie, to disinform, and to misrepresent the reality.
Yeah, Anan, it's one of the casualties, huge casualties, and particularly for the weak in the world, is the end of any meaningful way of international law and international humanitarian law. That has been made null and void. And we were all told that these are the virtues that come from the West, but they're the ones that are annulling it. Go ahead, Anan.
No, I would just like to say one thing. The saddest thing that I have seen so far is that Israel has decided to put a ban on the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who recently gave a speech saying he condemned October 7th attacks by Hamas. So if Israel calls that an enemy, or I don't know what a friend looks like to Israel. One of the saddest things also is, I have to say this as an American, I was hoping that President Biden would, for at least politically expedient purposes, would push for a ceasefire to help his vice president, Kamala Harris, win the November 5th presidential election. But possibly we're going to see this war enter, 2025. This is extraordinary.
Yeah, well, Sharmeen, don't have any hope on virtue coming from the American White House. It doesn't matter who's going to win the election next month. It's going to be the same exact thing. And play with the narrative all they want. We need to bring in more aid and all that. But you can't send in aid and arms at the same time. What do they think? We're fools? Go ahead.
We just did a report at the Cradle this morning that the U.S. has provided in the last year $23 billion to Israel. And then just today, the Israeli Central Bank released figures that the current costs of the Gaza and Lebanon wars for Israel are $66 billion, which amounts to about 12% of Israel's GDP. We've talked often here about the resistance axis boiling the Israeli frog, despite what happened in the last week and the short-lived euphoria of Israel and its allies. We're continuing to see the frog being boiled economically, politically, in terms of commerce, imports, exports, in terms of displacement within Israel, and now the thing they worried about most, and I don't know why they didn't see it coming, because Hezbollah has promised this since the 2006 wars, it's going to be an eye for an eye. You hit us, we're going to hit you in kind. You hit our airport, we will hit you. And now, God forbid, the Israelis start screaming about being hit in a Haifa, residential buildings, because they've basically eviscerated the southern the suburb of Beirut. So I think, it's really important to sort of recalibrate that narrative that took such hold last week, because really, truly, because this is the live stream genocide, we've owned the narrative almost from the onset. Israelis could have gone to the bank on October 7th with that, but they didn't. They launched the genocide. We own the narrative now. And I think, we have to understand that one of the main things, we're looking out for now is an Israeli reaction to Iran.
Okay, well, you're jumping ahead of me. That's exactly where I want to go to Esteban about this. Sharmeen is absolutely right about the dire consequences for Israel and for its people and its economy. But the only way to alleviate that, and that has to be done in the short run, is to get the United States to go to war with Iran, and that's on the cards right now. Go ahead, Esteban.
Israel has made it very clear that they are essentially willing to drag the entire world down with them in this search for a war with Iran. They have been trying to provoke Tehran for a while now, for years, even much before October 7. There's always been this attempt by Israel to kind of poke the bear. And it seems that, they succeeded most recently now with the with the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh, what they're doing here in Lebanon, which can only be called as an expansion of the genocidal war that started in Gaza. They are treating Beirut in the same way that they have been treating Gaza. So now Iran, as the head of, as Israelis like to say, as the head of the snake, in reality, as the biggest faction within the resistance axis, Iran has said it themselves. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said it last Friday, our strategic patience is over. We have been hearing reports about Iranians moving around their weaponry. We don't even know the complete capacity of what Iran is capable of. And for that fact, we don't even know the capacity of Hezbollah yet, because Hezbollah has also shown a lot of restraint, kind of just waiting for Israel to enter the ground, because this is where Hezbollah is going to have the upper hand. Now Iran is awaiting this much anticipated, retaliation to the retaliation that Israel has promised. They are talking about oil, hitting their oil fields. They are talking about hitting their nuclear facilities. And Iran is saying, if you miscalculate, your end is going to come so much quicker than you can even imagine. And I think at this point, we need to take the Iranians by their word, because, at some point, patience and diplomacy and anything else just runs out. And you need to punch the bully right in the face to keep it down. The question really is the U.S. going to fall for the trap? But then history tells us the U.S. has never looked at a war and said, no, I don't want that. They always look at a war and say, yeah, we can always have some more.
Well, yeah, but Esteban, this is the war. This is the very specific war that so many neocons in the United States have been waiting for decades. This is what makes this so dangerous for not only the region, but for the entire world, is that the resistance may see this is an opportunity to deal with the Zionist occupation of Palestine, but the neocons also think this is an opportunity to solve all problems all at the same time. And that's what really worries me about this, is that both sides have a very specific mission that they might be able to achieve. And considering what the U.S. has done in this century in that part of the world, I wouldn't put any bets on them. I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the year of genocide. Stay with RT.
Да, путь будет сложным.
Вот зараза, взялись, как сегодня, ты лень, пата.
Вспышка, копоть, гарь, нога оторвана.
Когда мозг сигнал посылает, а конечности нет, это тяжко, конечно.
Тихо, тихо, тихо.
Напоследок просто ударь его рукой, кулаком, просто собью.
Да, больно. Да, у тебя конечность валяется оторванная.
Аля, открывай! Открывай!
А тут одной ноги нету. Не смертельно.
Я уверен, что найду себя в этой жизни, найду применение.
Надо жить обязательно, в первую очередь надо жить.
Все красавчики.
Under the Russian state control narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the year of genocide. Okay, let's go back to Adnan. Charmaine already mentioned it. You know, we had a week of bravado and, you know, jokes about walkie-talkies and beepers and all of that. It was really quite disgusting. It really showed that the mask of brutality and indifference dropped in the West. I mean, people making jokes about it was just horrendous. And it's an affront to humanity. But having said that here, we're in a different week right now, and there are different things going on right now. What is the state of the resistance all across the West Asia? I love that phrase, West Asia. I'm not going to use Middle East anymore. Go ahead.
Look, we can all agree that what the Israelis did was a victory to some degree in the short term. Even Hezbollah's officials, including
the... you can win a battle. You can win a battle in a war, okay?
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. Yes, you can win a battle in a war, but that's not the same as winning a war. And as you can see, Hezbollah is holding the ground in the south. This is their territory. They have evicted the Israelis in the south and from South Lebanon in the year 2000, pushed them back in the year 2006. So there's no sign that tells me that this attack with the walkie-talkies, I think it's all gibberish. I mean, yes, you inflicted a defeat, a temporary defeat on Hezbollah, but they have managed to rally and hold the line. And as Charlene said, if I'm not mistaken, they fire 200 rockets into Haifa. That doesn't look like a group that's on the verge of collapse.
Well, exactly, and that's why, I'll go back to Charmaine here, that's why you were the first to mention Iran, and that's what makes me worry, and plus there is the dimension of American politics and what's famously called the October surprise, and this is something, you can slice and dice it. I mean, going to war with Iran in the month of October could either help or hurt the incumbent. It's very difficult to say, but again, I really want to stress to our viewers is that there are those in power, particularly in the United States, that have been itching to have a conflict with Iran. And this is the opportunity they want to grasp. Go ahead, Charmaine.
They do. I mean, look, Israel will look very weak. And this is a country very focused on a PR kind of war. So yep. They will look very weak if they don't respond to Iran. And they are getting a lot of pushback on that. I mean, certainly in terms of what, you know, when they mentioned oil facilities in Iran, because the Americans don't want oil prices to go through the roof just as a European winter approaches. That could scuttle their Ukraine plans, you know. So if the Israelis attack Iran, we don't know. We're just speculating here what their bank of targets will be. But what's really important to note is that geographically, Iran is very different than Israel. It's very mountainous in parts, vast swathes of desert. It is 90 times the size of Israel, okay? It's not like you can hit a few military bases. While really this week, you know, we've seen a lot of Iranian target bank maps on what could potentially be hit in Israel, because the Iranians will retaliate for sure. They have said this, and to understand how vulnerable Israel is, the whole country has only 6 power plants, 2 oil fields, 2 refineries, 1 oil terminal, 3 gas fields. Half of its water is supplied by only 5 desalination plants, and it has only 3 major ports, 1 Eilat that has been taken out by Yemeni fires earlier on in this war, and today Haifa port being struck by Hezbollah. So in a sense, it's suicide for the Israelis to do anything for against Iran, but it's suicide for them not to. So I think this is going to be very carefully watched. According to Iranian officials today, regional countries, Persian Gulf states that host American bases, have assured Iran that no projectiles, fighter jets, drones, missiles will be launched from their territories. They don't want to get involved with their big, powerful neighbor. So I think what's coming up in terms of a direct Iranian Israeli fight is going to be pretty defining. So, you know, we have only that to watch. And it's caused so much insecurity in Israel. You know, the statistics are flying. This week, the Israeli Broadcasting Authority released a poll saying that 61% of Israelis don't feel safe in the country, 86% of them that won't return to the Gaza envelope. The Israeli authorities yesterday and day before said the northern settlers who were, who moved from the north early on the war are welcome to come back. And the settlers said, No way, no how. You know, 41% say their trust in their army has been damaged. And 73% of Israelis believe that Israel has failed against just Hamas, which was the weakest link in the resistance axis. So you have to ask yourself, you can use all the military firepower in the world, but have you achieved a single one of your stated goals?
But Charmaine, that's a very interesting point, and I think it's really important to ponder. I'm going to go to Esteban about this. It seems to me that forever war in lieu of a security outcome in favor of Israel and the West is what they're opting for. You know, I've always likened the West foreign policy, looking at like Ukraine, looking at Syria, looking at Iraq. You know, it's always like a roulette wheel. They just keep spinning the wheel until they get their lucky number. It's illusory, it's crazy, very dangerous, very expensive. But I think that's one of the things that's happening right now, is that they're looking for the winning hand. I mean, it's dealing with people that are not rational.
100%, this is an irrational war. And as you're saying, this does have the makings of a forever war, but waged by whom? By the Israeli army. The Israeli army, whose the majority of its forces are reservists. The majority of its force is actually the economic base of Israel, the workers. This cannot last. There's a reason why the offensive in Lebanon has been so intense, so ferocious over the past 2-3 weeks. It's because there is a concerted effort to make it end as quickly as possible for them, for their economy, for their security, for their, like, you know, even to save face at the end of the day. Because look at what's happening in Gaza. Just yesterday, Hamas launched another volley of rockets from Khan Yunis, an area of Gaza that has been already under Israeli siege multiple times, towards Tel Aviv. So where's the victory in Gaza? And what does that make them think that there's going to be a victory in Lebanon, much less against Iran? So I think the term forever war is correct, but it might actually, you know, it seems like it's going to come and bite him in the ass at the end.
Yeah. Adnan, go ahead.
Israel, since its inception, since David Ben-Gurion, has relied on a very firm military strategy, and that is short, hard wars. It has no strategic depth. It cannot take protracted wars and wars of attrition.
Yep.
The longer this goes on, the more Israel loses. So we're not really sure why Israel keeps expanding.
Well, and on that point there, I mean, again...
Can I jump in and comment on what Charmaine
said earlier? Go ahead,
please
do. That's the whole point of the program. Go ahead.
Yes, Charmaine had said something, and correct me if I'm wrong, Charmaine, that if Israel attacks, this would be suicide for Israel if they attacked Iran, correct?
Yeah, in terms of the retaliatory response from Iran.
I think the point, they should not attack Iran. That would be a face-saving moment. They can preserve their security. It's Netanyahu that's committing suicide by going and attacking Iran, but he's trying to save his own political career.
He will view it as a vulnerability, and Israelis will view not striking Iran as a big sign of weakness, and that's why I think they will go ahead and do it in some measure.
Yes, and also, I agree with both of you, actually, in a way. But, you know, again, you have to remember the American angle here. You're going to have the Lindsey Grahams and people like that, or they're going to say, Bibi, this is our chance. Come on, you know, do it. He truly believes it. And also, you have to keep in mind, we're talking about West Asia right now, but damaging, putting a strategic defeat on Iran is a defeat for Russia in their minds as well, because Russia is not directly involved with the resistance, but it's certainly a friend of it here. So these people are thinking really big. They think big and they fail big. Charmaine, go ahead, jump in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say the Russians are not necessarily unhappy at the Americans pumping in, their missiles and their 200-pound bombs to the Israelis, because that is those are weapon systems and munitions that are being deprived in the Ukrainian theater. So, you know, and we know, for instance, I mean, the Russians may not be directly involved, but we know, for instance, that from Russian sources that the S-400 anti-aircraft systems and anti-missile systems are operational
and,
in Iran.
And Russian technicians as well. Keep going.
Russian technicians. We do believe that, this could be a game changer. We know that Iran is, you know, certainly probably more prepared than Israel in terms of a missile war with each other, but we're not so sure about the air defenses. But I think now we seem to have that from the Russians. Iran appears to also have received the Su-35s from the Russians. It's a deal they made a while ago. Yep. We believe certain amount of those are now in Iran. I do think, you know, we know from months ago that U.S. military contractors were turning down orders because they were still fulfilling a backlog, and that was for Ukraine. But now to Israel, too. How long can this go on? This is what I'm saying. One of the goals of the resistance axis is to, you know, make sure this is a protracted war and that Israel is slowly, incrementally degraded in every one of its sectors, military, economic, political, so forth. And that is, in fact, happening. So, I do think the Israelis, the current Israeli coalition led by Netanyahu, will view any non-response to Iran as a weakness that they can't abide. They've been champing at the bit since the 2006 war in Lebanon.
That's right.
To go at it again. So, you know, I don't think they won't respond. I do think they will. And again, if they breach Iran's territorial integrity, okay, it will be even greater than the assassination of Haniyeh in Tehran.
Oh, I agree.
And Iran will respond. And as we see, and I think we know that Iran will respond to infrastructure in Israel. They have not only said so, but now we have Israeli allies saying an infrastructure hit. The Wall Street Journal said just this week an infrastructure hit would be devastating for Israel because it's got so little.
Yeah, well, and Charmaine, we're rapidly running out of time, but I'd like to remind our viewers here, Iran has not to this point been killing Israelis, unlike the Israelis killing Palestinians and Lebanese. It's very disproportionate that way. I want to thank all my guests in Beirut. It's been a fascinating discussion. I hope you all come back. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.